You're listening to The Healthy Sensitive. Here with Jules DeVito, and really excited to have you on the show. You are a transpersonal coach, yes?
Yes, that's right. And thank you so much for having me as well. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, it's such a thrill. I was, I'm trying very hard not to be the Pomeranian puppy who's getting too excited. So if I get a little eager, please go ahead and tell me to slow down.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking more about, the transpersonal coaching and the work I do as well.
Oh, wonderful. And I would love to start there because I think a lot of people, when they hear transpersonal coach, might not know what that is. So I would, perhaps we could start there. Tell me a bit more about what it is you do and why it is you love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is true. Most of the people I speak to haven't heard of transpersonal psychology or transpersonal coaching before. So transpersonal really is a holistic, more integrative way of working with people. So it draws on the spiritual dimension of our being. And that's the part which I get most excited about, because most of the time in coaching, counseling, therapy, the spiritual aspect has been cut out or forgotten about in a way. So transpersonal is basically everything we already do, and then integrating this understanding that there is this spiritual dimension to who we are and working with that in coaching sessions. So in terms of my journey and how I got into that and how I got into working with sensitive people as well, I would say in my late 20s, early 30s, I went through quite a significant period of burnout, and there were so many things that happened in quite a short space of time. And it was a really transformative time for me. And it was also quite challenging. And then that led me to go on to study transpersonal psychology and do my master's in that, and then study transpersonal coaching. So that's how I got into the work. And then I noticed that most of my clients and the people coming to me for coaching were highly sensitive. I'm also highly sensitive, and I realized there was a resonance there. And, because I relate to the experience of being sensitive and being very intuitive and quite empathetic, I think I was attracting people with similar traits. And it also made it clear to me just how important it is to find coaches or therapists that do understand the trait and know what it means to be a highly sensitive person.
And how would you describe, because high sensitivity, when you say that, all of these bells and whistles light up, because it's it's my passion. But how do you describe being highly sensitive to those who might not be familiar with the trait? Either perhaps they are sensitive but did not know that that was a thing, only that they, and this is, I hear this word a lot, I just thought I was a weirdo, or I just thought I was strange. Or perhaps to someone who is not sensitive and doesn't quite know what you mean by that. Like, how do you describe that in a way that's really approachable and palatable to people?
So I think that's a really good question. And the first thing to say is, there's been so much scientific research on high sensitivity and what it means to be a highly sensitive person. So the first thing I would say is to check out the work of Dr. Elaine Aron, because she is basically the lady who coined the term the highly sensitive person, and she was the first person to do the research in the mid-90s. That's when it all began. So there's so much incredible research in terms of what it means to be highly sensitive. And a lot of it is based on the brain as well, which I think is fascinating. So they found that around 20% of the population, 20 to 30%, are highly sensitive. And we are, so it's understood as having depth of processing. So we process the world very deeply. That includes our internal and external environment. We tend to get overstimulated, overwhelmed. So yeah, our nervous systems are just very, very sensitive and intuitive to what's going on in the world around us. And then we also have high levels of empathy as well. So we're very empathetic. We pick up on really subtle cues in the world and in people as well. And so there's other things as well. I would say, I would suggest that a way of identifying someone who is highly sensitive is they're more likely to pause and check before they take action. They're not always introverted, but they are more likely to be introverted than extroverted. So I'm actually introverted and highly sensitive. But yeah, that you can be extroverted as well as having the traits of sensitivity.
What marks, so how would one know that they are both sensitive as well as extroverted?
That's a really good question. So yeah, in terms of being extroverted versus introverted, it can be a bit of a, so it can be a bit of a contradiction if you're highly sensitive and extroverted. So for example, there is something called high sensation seeking, which I find is another fascinating term. And these are people who really enjoy novelty and change and actually seek out quite stimulating activities and environments. They like to travel a lot. They like a lot of change. And so I would relate that also to being extroverted. But of course, that can cause some challenges if you're so sensitive to being overwhelmed and overstimulated because you have these like conflicting parts. So just to add to that, we're using all of these terms and labels. I always say that we can't put people into distinct boxes. So whether you're introverted or extroverted or highly sensitive or a high sensation seeker, there's so much overlap. And I think it's really important to recognize that we're all different. And so, yes, you can relate more to a certain characteristic or trait, but there's so much variety in who we are, and of course, we change depending on our circumstance as well.
That's so, I mean, I'm someone who identifies as being a sensation seeker as well as being highly sensitive. And someone once, it might have been Elaine Aron herself, I'm not perfectly sure, but it was described as having one foot on the gas and one foot on the brakes pretty much at all times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
So.
I can relate to that.
Yes. So, as you're speaking, I'm nodding along, going, ah, yes. And I love what you said about this idea of not putting people in boxes. I find having a language around sensitivity is really powerful and can be therapeutic. And I am very reluctant to leap into those into label terrain for that very reason. I don't want people to feel like they are now in a box and that therefore they can't do things because of insert label. And so it's a fine line. You know, having a label creates an ability to communicate with others about my experience. But two, if I box myself in too much, I'm losing perhaps all these other elements that make me who I am. So it's a really lovely sort of piece to add into the equation. Glad you said that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Well, and as we're talking about this too, speaking of sort of boxes or labels, you know, when I talk about sensitivity, a lot of times people will ask, well, is this something that was learned? So perhaps from trauma, or is this an environmental response, the sensitivity, or is this biological? Do we just come on the planet with, like, so is it nature or nurture?
Yes, really good question. And I'm really fascinated by this topic as well because the research tells us that we are born into this world sensitive. So it is believed to be an innate trait, something we're born with. And so, in that way, it's separate from things like trauma or post-traumatic stress disorder or ADHD. So sometimes, yeah, the way that the traits are expressed in a person can have overlapping, let's say, symptoms to other things like I just mentioned, but the research would say it's actually something separate from those, let's say, disorders. And you know, high sensitivity is not a disorder either. However, we definitely are impacted by our environment. So depending on what experiences we have as children, that's going to cause the trait to express itself differently. So if we grow up in quite challenging environments, then the research shows that when we grow up to be adults, we are more likely to experience anxiety, depression, burnout, things like that. However, we also, and this is the thing I love the most, there's something called vantage sensitivity that says that if we grow up in quite nourishing environments and healthy environments, then later in life, we're actually going to flourish more than the average person. So we kind of have this, it's more of a diverse, more diversity in terms of, yes, our struggles and our strengths. And that's something also called differential susceptibility. That's the official, label for it. And I just find that fascinating. And I think it's so important to know that because, yeah, a lot of the time people think of sensitivity and they think, oh, it's a weakness or a flaw, or there's something wrong with me, or it means I'm anxious, or it means, yeah, all of these kind of negative connotations. But actually, the research is saying we're much more likely to flourish and do well in those nourishing environments, right? So it's really
Yes.
interesting.
So it's perhaps why I love the symbol of orchid so much. With orchids, their needs are so very specific, to the point where you don't water them, you put ice cubes on them so that the rate of watering is just so. But the degree of resilience of that flower is remarkable. So, unlike many flowers, it can come back from almost the brink of death, you know? But its needs are very specific. And so it seems like such an apt metaphor. It's why they're often called orchid people. It's my understanding.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there is this analogy that's used a lot with the orchids and the dandelions. And so the orchids are the highly sensitive people or the highly sensitive children. I also love that. I think it's such a powerful image as well that we can really use to help us understand what it means to be sensitive. And at the same time, just to add to what I said earlier, The only issue I have with it, not that it's an issue, but this idea that yes, it kind of is suggesting there are two distinct categories. And like I said, I don't think it's that clear or that distinct. And I think more recent research has showed that there are actually three categories. They talk about the orchids, the tulips, and the dandelions, right? So we've
Yes.
got highly sensitive, and then medium sensitive, and then people who are not sensitive at all. And I think that's very interesting as well.
Yes, the idea of a spectrum absolutely resonates for me. Yes. And as you were, sort of talking about the landscape of all of this, I'm wondering too, in terms of, like when people are coming to you, because what you're saying is that if I am a highly sensitive person and I happen to have grown up in an environment that was really nourishing, the likelihood of my being able to thrive is higher than average. And then on the flip side, though, it's only when the environment is perhaps especially difficult, or tumultuous would probably be the better word, where things like burnout or anxiety or things of that nature get provoked. It's interesting, first of all, for my end to think about how this is a trait that's found in hundreds of species. And so it keeps coming up as a minority trait, but a rather large minority. So we're not getting weeded out, which tells me that there is an advantage to having us in the group. Perhaps we're the ones that notice the lion first, or, when Elaine Aaron re referenced an experiment where fish were exposed to a trap, like it didn't cause them any harm, but there was bait and the fish were given an opportunity to try and get it, and the more sensitive fish held back. And even the language that the scientists used were things like reluctant or nervous or, not derogatory, but not exactly celebrated terms. And Elaine Aaron had sort of the caveat of, or smart. I love this idea that it's not that it's a problem. It also doesn't necessarily mean that it's a superpower, but it is a trait that has proven to be advantageous if considered in the context of a larger group. You don't want us weeded out. You perhaps don't want us to be the only people in your tribe, but we're useful.
Right, absolutely. And that, again, as you're pointing out, that's what the research tells us, that it does have advantages in terms of evolution, right? That's why we haven't been weeded out. And I would take it even further than that. I think not only is it an advantage in terms of evolution, I really believe, and this is where the transpersonal spiritual component comes in, that we do have a soul purpose. We have a reason for being. We have so many gifts and qualities that we need to share with the world. And I think those gifts are really, really needed right now. I mean, in a way, more so than ever, because of, we're in such a state of crisis. And so I think there is a soul purpose behind the traits of sensitivity. And unfortunately, many sensitive people aren't aware or don't know how to connect with those gifts. And also, even in terms of the fact that we do experience, or we're more impacted by trauma or things like burnout, I think that can be an advantage when we actually come through those challenges. So there's things like post-traumatic growth, or what I would call spiritual emergence, and it's this ability to really heal and transform when we go through really difficult experiences. So, yeah, it's a bit of a contradiction, but this sense that our challenges can become our greatest strengths, right? So, I think that is also one of the gifts of being a sensitive person.
Yes, and I'm also wondering too, you know, why do maybe, yeah, I'll say why. Why do you imagine that having a transpersonal coach might be of particular benefit to a sensitive person?
Yeah, really good question. So, for a few reasons, one, I would say because we have an understanding of things like spiritual emergence that I just mentioned, and this perspective that times of crisis can lead us to emerge and, yeah, basically access greater levels of consciousness. So there's something I talk about a lot, which is the wounded healer archetype. So it is this idea that, yeah, you know, we go through a lot of difficulties, we experience a lot of wounds, but we have to go through those challenges so that we then know how to help and support others on their path of healing. And I think highly sensitive people, we are very much the wounded healers of the world. Because we have, yeah, we feel so much and we have experienced so much in life. And so I think, yeah, as a transpersonal coach, having that understanding and that awareness that actually there's nothing, quote unquote, wrong with us. Because I'm aware that a lot of mainstream psychologists or therapists or even coaches can sometimes diagnose. I'm not saying that we all do that, you know, obviously all coaches and therapists are different. We all have different ways of working, but a lot of the time there can be this desire to diagnose or put someone into a specific label or category. And I really believe we need to move away from that. And I'm talking about things like anxiety or depression here. And see, actually, I believe there's always a meaning behind our struggles. And it's about finding that meaning and connecting with that meaning. So that's part of the work I do as a transpersonal coach. It's about connecting with the meaning and purpose behind our life experiences.
It's almost like giving the role of the narrator more potency. Like I want to use the word reframe, but that's almost a very diluted version of it. But it's more allowing someone to reauthor their like experiences in a way that sets them up as the hero of their own story.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful way of putting it. Yeah, exactly what it is.
Well, I imagine because the challenge that I've had as a coach, and I'm sure this is true for you, is that we are still swimming in water where diagnosing, you know, that's the language that we've all sort of been indoctrinated into. So when people first come to you, what are some of the complaints that you're helping them to reauthor or reframe into a more meaningful, like sort of language?
Yeah, so most of the complaints or struggles that people come to me with are things like we've spoken about. So, overwhelm, anxiety, feeling burnt out, the sense of having poor boundaries or not knowing how to set boundaries, often having a strong inner critic. So I find a lot of the sensitive people I work with are really, really hard on themselves and often strive towards perfectionism, which can have its advantages as well, but also has its struggles. And then also, yeah, this idea that I just spoke about, which is because we're so sensitive and able to pick up subtle energies and connect with what Carl Jung spoke about, which is the collective unconscious. So we have quite vivid dreams as well, and we can have quite spiritual experiences that we can't always make sense of. So that can be quite confusing sometimes. So my work as a coach, transpersonal coach, is to help them make sense of those experiences, to integrate them. And then in terms of the overwhelm, I use a lot of mindfulness techniques. I work on developing a strong sense of self, so we can, set healthy boundaries. And then I use a lot of self-compassion practices as well. So that's really helpful for the inner critic and, cultivating that compassion for ourselves, because we can be really compassionate towards others, but often we can sometimes neglect our self-care. So yes, there's a spectrum of experiences that I work with in terms of the struggles that people come with.
And I'd be curious too, because something that it comes up a lot for me. There's a number of folks who might say, okay, I feel pretty good about who I am, and I've had to do a lot of work on it, but I'm okay with it now. But now I have to go back into the world and negotiate with the world on the world's terms. And that terrifies me because I don't feel like I'm understood, or I don't know if I can find a way in the world that allows me to be myself and to nourish myself and make a living. Is that something that you found in your practice as well? Do people find that to be a challenge?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the sense of feeling misunderstood and often feeling alone is a big one. And so I do work a lot with helping sensitive people to remember they're not alone. We're not alone in our experience. And I think that's where community comes in, and it's so important to connect with others who are sensitive, to find that community, to find others who relate to your lived experience. So that's a big one. And then I think the second part is, really trying to find a life that does feel authentic to us. And that can be difficult, if we're working in quite hectic, overwhelming environments. We might have to take more time out for self-care. We might have to take more breaks than non-sensitive people. So it's really about learning to listen to what we need and what feels right for us. And I can relate to that from my personal experience. So I worked as a teacher for over a decade, and I found it incredibly overwhelming, teaching, working with children. It's nonstop, and I would often feel overwhelmed and exhausted. Actually, that was a big cause of my burnout. So I really had to learn how to listen to what I needed. And I would spend a lot of time in nature when I wasn't working. I would, during the holidays, go away and just make sure I had that time for myself, work on the self-compassion, and being realistic in terms of what I was capable of doing as well. So I think that's where the high sensation seeking comes in, because I definitely have that part of me that wants to do a lot and wants to be busy and always has projects on the go. And that's the same now in my business. So yeah, it's discernment and really checking in with yourself. That's important.
Oh, and as you're mentioning your business, I know too that you're interested in not just working with people who are sensitive and helping them on their journey, but also helping those who want to help highly sensitive people. You're training others to do the work you do or to work in the capacity that you do. And what would you say are some of the most important things you would want anyone working with highly sensitive people to know about them and about how to work with this population?
Yeah, really good question. So I think the first thing is having the awareness and understanding of what sensitivity is. So, like I said earlier, there's so many misconceptions about sensitivity. So I think when we're working with highly sensitive people, we need to be clear on what it means, understand the trait fully, because the most important thing from my experience is that sensitive people feel heard. We want to be heard, we want to be seen, we want to be understood. So when we have that understanding, when we can hold space for sensitive people, and also not try to fix or change them in any way, that's really important too. Holding space and allowing them to be who they are is really key. So that's in the training that I do in terms of training other people to work with highly sensitive people. That's one of the things I focus on the most. And then, yeah, there's certain skills which I help coaches to learn so they can support highly sensitive people. And those skills are the things I've mentioned and spoken about already. So it's the mindfulness, setting healthy boundaries, cultivating self-compassion, reframing our identity and, reframing how we see ourselves as sensitive people. That's a big one. Working with the inner child, because often we have had difficult experiences growing up because of our sensitivity. So we need to work on integrating and healing the inner child as well. And then, yeah, working on the transpersonal level as well. Like I said, cultivating this awareness that there is something more than, and it doesn't matter what our belief system is either. It doesn't matter what religion or spiritual practice we follow. It's about connecting with this more sacred part of our lives and our reality and deciding what that is for us. So, yeah, those are some of the things that I'm helping coaches to cultivate in their practice so they can work with sensitive people.
So lovely. And so then is it fair to say that you do, it's almost like you occupy two roles. One is the trainer of other people who would like to work with this group, and one as the healer who works directly with people.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I started out working as a coach directly for sensitive people. And then, as my practice has developed, I've now, yeah, gone into training other coaches. So, I've got a course coming up in September. It's a 3-month online training. And I'm just really excited about sharing this work with people because I know how much it's needed. And even if someone is a coach and they don't work with highly sensitive people directly, I still think it's really important to have an awareness of the trait and understand it, because the research tells us that about half of the population, oh no, half of the people that go for coaching or therapy or counseling are sensitive. So it's a really high number of us as seeking out, coaching and support. So yeah, we really need to be understood, and I think that's why this work is so important.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that we constitute only about 20 to 30% of the general population, but half of those who seek therapy or coaching. So it's and I often do hear from clients that, well, my therapist didn't even know this was a thing, which is a tragedy, and it really does speak to how valuable and important your work is, so that more of the therapists who are working with this group at the very least have a sense of what it is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think even if that's all we get to, just having an understanding that it's a real trait and knowing how it expresses itself in clients, and that's a really great start.
Well, you mentioned that there's a training program happening in September, and I would, of course, love to gush about it. And so, if someone were listening to this and they wanted to find you, either to work with you as a practitioner or, they want to take your training, how would they find you?
Yeah, so I have a website which is highlysensitivehumans.com, and on there you can find out about the academy where the course is taking place on. You can also find out about my podcast, Highly Sensitive Humans, and any blogs and articles I write. So all of the information is on there. I'm also on Instagram, which is highly.sensitive.humans, and I have a Facebook group. So I'd love to share those, links with everyone so they can find out more about the training and my work as well.
Absolutely. I'll be sure to include those on the show notes as well.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Wonderful. And is there the last thing I always like to ask is there anything I wasn't smart enough to ask that you want to share or that it comes up? And if the answer is no, that's perfectly fine too.
I think we covered everything. Yeah, there's nothing I feel we haven't shared that I can think of right now. I'm sure there will be later. There always is more to talk about, but right
Yes.
now that feels good.
Wonderful. Well, I've got to say, Jules, it was just such a delight to have you, and I feel I'm really encouraged and inspired to know that you're doing the work that you're doing. And I will be, again, just blasting it anyway, sharing your work with anyone that I come across because I do think it's just so important.
Thank you so much, and it's been a real pleasure talking today.
Likewise. Thanks again. Take good care. Bye.
Thank you.